Vaishnavis. Vastunaha, of all matter, mridu, softness, katinya, hardness, lagu, lightness, guru, heaviness, oshna, warmness, sitatam, coldness, jigrishataha, desiring to perceive. Twak, the touch sensation. Nirbina, distributed. Tasyam, in the skin. Roma, hairs on the body. Mahi Ruha, as well as the trees, the controlling deities. Tatra, there. Cha, also. Antaha, within. Bahi, outside. Vataha, sorry, Vataha Tvacha, the sense of touch or the skin. Labda, having been perceived. Gunaha, objects of sense perception. Vritaha, generated. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. When there was a desire to perceive the physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, hardness, warmth, cold, lightness, and heaviness, the background of sensation, the skin pores, the hairs on the body and their controlling deities, the trees, were generated. Within and outside the skin is a covering of air through which sense perception became prominent. The physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, are subjects of sense perception. And thus, physical knowledge is the subject matter of the touch sensation. One can measure the temperature of matter by touching with the hand, and no one can measure the weight of an object by lifting it with the hand. Sorry, did I read that right? And one can measure the weight of an object by lifting it with the hand and thus estimate its heaviness or lightness. The skin pores, and the hairs on the body are all interdependent with the touch sensation. The air blowing within and outside the skin is also an object of sense perception. This sense perception is also a source of knowledge, and therefore it is suggested here that physical or physiological knowledge is subordinate to the knowledge of the self, as above mentioned. Knowledge of self can expand to the knowledge of phenomena, but physical knowledge cannot lead to knowledge of the self. There is, however, an intimate relation between the hairs on the body and the vegetation on the body of the earth. The vegetables are nourishment for the skin, both as food and medicine, as stated in the third canto, Tvacham Asya Vinirbinam Vivisor Dishnyam Osadi. Omagana tamaranda sha jananjana shalakaya chakshur unmili tamyena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitamyena bhutale swayam upakaramayam tirati swaparantikam. So, this verse is one of a series of verses in which the creation of the universe is being described. And the primary idea is that it's all coming from a person. It's not happening by accident. Back, this is text 23 that we're reading today. Back in text 7, Sukadeva Goswami makes the statement. He says, "The Supreme One, who is celebrated as the Supreme Being, or the Supreme Soul, is the supreme source of the cosmic manifestation, as well as its reservoir and winding up. Thus, he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth." So, it's Sukadeva Goswami is stating there that everything is coming from this supreme being. It's maintained by that supreme being, and eventually, it's when that manifestation is wound up, it'll re-enter into the supreme being. That's further. Then in text number 11, Sukadeva Goswami kind of gives further emphasis that it's a person. It's not just a force. It's not whatever. It's actually a person. He says the supreme person is not impersonal, and therefore is distinctively a nara or person. Therefore, the transcendental water created from the supreme nara is known as nara, and because he lies down on that water, he is known as Narayana. So once again, there's no purport to that, but just emphasizing this point that this is all originating from a supreme person. And then in text number 14, it says, "Just hear from me how the potency of his lordship divides one into three, called the controlling deities, the controlled entities, and the material bodies, in the manner above mentioned." So it's pretty clear, the idea. It's a pretty clear idea that's being given here by Sukadeva Goswami, that the origin of creation is a person, and he is responsible for everything that happens. So it's not mentioned here, but elsewhere we get information that this creation is, this universe is created. There's a person. It's created by a person and for a purpose. See, this is kind of like pretty easy, straightforward, easy to understand, but it's actually not a very popular idea these days. But this is the Vedic idea that the universe is created by a person with a purpose, for a purpose. That purpose is, this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 5, text 24, in the purport, Prabhupada says, this is the purpose of the creation. "The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, and that is its main purpose. The Lord is so kind that in the absence of such a manifestation, he feels something wanting, and thus the creation takes place." And he goes on to say, "The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls to the real life of spiritual consciousness, so that they may thus become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha lokas. Since the Lord is Satchidananda Vigraha, he likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa, because participation with the Lord in his eternal rasa lila is the highest living condition, perfect in spiritual bliss and eternal knowledge." So that's the purpose of this creation or this universe. Yesterday, interestingly enough, we heard a class by Srila Prabhupada, and he was speaking about, in one part of it, the creation, the process of creation. The first part of the class, he was basically criticizing human beings that don't understand that this human form of life is meant for self-realization, understanding more about their relationship with God. And he was saying how, he was pointing out how they're working in vain, you know, to no avail. They work very hard. He gave that example of the the little boy who didn't even know who his father was because his father was always leaving early for work and coming back very late like that. But then in the second part of the class, you could say, he addressed this issue of the creation. The first point he made, and well, it's interesting to note that that class was given by Prabhupada in 1972 here in New Dwarka on Radhastami. So that was a class. I mean, I kind of was surprised yesterday when I was sitting here listening to it, because at the beginning of the class, it showed on the board, Los Angeles, 1972, Radhastami. So I was kind of expecting to hear something about Radharani during the class, but there was no mention of Radharani. I'm not pointing that out as a fault. I just found it interesting that on Radhastami, here was Prabhupada presenting some, you know, very, very basic philosophy. And one of the main themes of the class was creation. Now, the first point he made in his presentation when he started talking about the creation was that he made the point that all the information about the creation, such as how the world is created, how it will be annihilated, how it's being maintained, who is the supreme manager, everything is there, Sankhya philosophy. In other words, it's all there in the Vedic literatures. And so there's no need for research. In other words, one just has to take it from the Vedic literatures. Towards the end, he reiterated that point, emphasized it even more strongly after he made some other points. He goes, "So we are not so fool that we shall make research. Everything is there. We are confident. We know what is going to happen next. It is not astrology. Everything is there in the Vedic knowledge. Veda means knowledge, full knowledge. You take advantage of it and become learned." That was his conclusion about, you know, talking about the creation. That you learn about it from the Vedic literatures. No need to do research. No need to speculate. Just take it and apply it in your life and you'll be learned. Now, going back again, he criticizes this inclination of people to do just the opposite, you know, to speculate about the creation and try to understand it like that. Do research, speculation, same thing. And he pointed out yesterday that there's quite a history to that. It started, well, he didn't say it started, but one example he gave was Kapila. Ironically, he was speaking on that part of the Bhagavatam, the teachings of Lord Kapila to Devahuti. So, but he mentioned that there was, after the real Kapila, who's an incarnation of Krishna, there was another Kapila who was, he used the word, Nirisha, godless. He was, he also presented so-called Sankhya philosophy, but with no God in the picture. And Prabhupada said that that's the modern idea. That the modern idea is that no more God. That is very primitive to talk of God as a primitive idea. Now we are advanced in science. Why shall we talk about God? Prabhupada then said, this is the tendency. Now, then he criticized that. And his criticism of it was that, you're thinking you're so smart, basically. I'm putting it in my words now. You're thinking you're so smart that you can figure out about the creation with your teeny brain. But you try to understand, as Prabhupada's saying, you're only just a product of the creation. You've got this teeny brain. He used the expression, he used the words, with some muscles and some veins. And that's a product of the material world. What are you going to be able to understand with that? People are, in general, there's a lot of points he didn't explicitly state, but they're implied that people are very proud. Human beings are generally very proud. Look at all the progress we've made over the last few thousand years. people are living now, they have comforts that kings couldn't imagine having. You know, you live in an apartment, it's got electric lights, you got hot and cold running water, you have central heating, you have air conditioning, you have refrigeration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These were things that the royalty back, like, say, 1,000 or 2,000 years ago would not have enjoyed. They wouldn't even dreamed of it, okay? So people are proud. We've made so much progress. We're intelligent. It's obvious. We're an intelligent race of beings, and we will figure it out, you know, because we're so intelligent. We'll figure out everything eventually, ultimately. But Prabhupada points out that, okay, if you're so intelligent, and he uses Albert Einstein as the example of, you know, why didn't Einstein create a brain like his own so that in his absence there would be no lacking of scientific brains? But then he gets on to the real, he makes his real, a bigger, stronger point, which is that, okay, you're so smart. How come, if you're so smart, how come with your big, great intelligence, you're not able to address the real perennial questions that the creation is pushing in your face, is presenting to you, such as old age, disease, the biggest one, death? Nobody wants these things. And of course, they don't believe in rebirth, but, you know, that's there too. In other words, if you were so smart, you think, you know, you pride yourself, we're so smart, we can do research, we can speculate, we can understand the creation. If you're so smart, why not use your intelligence, your smartness to resolve these things? Do something about old age. Right? Well, people are living a bit longer. Nah, whatever. Maybe a few years longer. Maybe. What about, you know, disease? And the big, big one, as I said, death. Nobody wants that. But they haven't been able to do that. See, so Prabhupada's pointing out that, you know, they should be more humble. You know, this is supreme. You have to, at that point, somebody who's intelligent will see there's a controller. There is control. These, you know, they're being controlled by a higher power of something, of some sort. But they don't see that. So then Prabhupada goes on. He says here, so to accept the supreme controller is a must. You must. Without it, you cannot go forward. You have to accept. We can appreciate the brain of a scientist, but who has created that brain? Very kind of obvious but important point. Who has created that brain? Just like a child, he appreciates a motor car, how it is running, but his father appreciates how the driver is operating the motor car. Therefore, we should not be amazed by the creation or the working of the material nature. We should appreciate who is conducting, who is the background of this material nature. That is stated in Bhagavad Gita, and he quotes that verse, Maya Jakshena Prakriti. But, and then Prabhupada gives an example of the leaves, how the leaves, you know, all fall down at a certain point during the fall, and then when the spring roll, you know, comes around, there they are again. And he's, you know, he's making the point there that there's a system. This is not happening by accident. There's a system behind all that. Just like, and he goes on, he gives another example of trees bearing fruit. It all happens at a certain point. It's not accidental, or it's just, it's all part of an arrangement by a higher intelligence. And he uses those two things, and he makes an analogy. Similarly, when God says, "Let there be creation," millions of planets immediately created. That is God, not that cheap God. In your country, they come and you become cheated. We don't accept such cheap God. We want this God. Simply by his will, millions of universes are created. So, yeah, okay, so basic idea is this, that we're talking about creation. We have our take on the matter as you know, devotees, Vaishnavas, and the non-devotee community, they have their take on the matter. But This is a pretty reasonable presentation here. You know, what we're getting from Prabhupada and the Vedic literatures. And as Prabhupada concludes, he said, everything is there. We are confident. So following in the footsteps of Prabhupada, we should also be confident. And, you know, that everything is there in the Vedic knowledge. Veda means knowledge, full knowledge. You take everything, take advantage of it and become learned. That's his conclusion. So one point, and that's pretty much all I wanted to say about today's verse, but one thing I wanted to mention was that yesterday when I was listening to this lecture, I found, you know, I kind of picked up on this, oh, Prabhupada's talking about creation. But it was kind of like vague. I mean, when I walked out of the class, I couldn't remember any particular point that he made. That's why I came up to the lectern here and I grabbed the sheets. And then later in the day, I went back and I went through the lecture, as you can see, and I kind of tried to zero in on the specific points and then think about them more. And I got some realization on, you know, the instruction Prabhupada gives about study my books scrutinizingly. It's one thing to hear something. It's one thing to read something. It's another thing to study something. It's something to study something scrutinizingly. And that's what Prabhupada wanted us to do, meaning that he wanted us to study what he wrote and what he said serious carefully enough so that we could retain some of the points. You know, something stayed with us and that we could not remember it for ourselves and use it, you know, to present to other people to convince them. And I, at least for myself, I realized that without doing what I just did, it didn't work. And as if I would have just heard that lecture yesterday and then, say, went out on Sankirtan and tried to start talking to somebody, I couldn't make the points because just hearing it was not sufficient for me. Maybe for Archie it might be, or somebody with a, you know, better memory, but I had to go over it. So Prabhupada said, study my books scrutinizingly. And now I can understand why. Because unless we do that, at least some of us, unless we do that, it's just one in ear and out the other. So we got to make sure that we try to, you know, you hear something that you think, wow, that's interesting, or that makes a lot of sense, or, yeah, never thought of that. Then don't just leave it at that. Grab it. You know, if you're hearing it, find out where it's in print. Read it again. Think about it. Make some, you know, underline things. Make your own notes. It's got to become part of you so that when you communicate with other people, you can share that with them. That's important. And actually, could somebody hand me my jacket from over there? I had to make this next point. I need something I brought that I didn't forget to bring over here. As I was going through the lecture, another thing I noticed that there was a couple places where Prabhupada said something, just a line or two, didn't make sense, you know. And like, for instance, he was talking here, he said, so to accept the Supreme Controller is a must, you must. Without it, thank you. Without it, you cannot go forward. You must accept. He goes, we can appreciate the brain of a scientist. What the is who has created that brain? We are seeing that person who has created, not the brain. Didn't make any sense to me. I mean, maybe if I thought about it a bit more or something like that. And there was another phrase like that down. It goes, millions of trees are getting their leaves again. And millions of trees, they are falling. Millions of fruits are coming out. Didn't make any sense. My point is this, that it's not like the Acharya. Actually, it's not like the Acharya. The perfection of the Acharya is not that he doesn't say even, you know, one thing wrong or doesn't maybe, you know, say a couple things in a lecture that, you know, it doesn't make perfect sense. That's a misunderstanding. And I remember this conversation I heard. I wasn't personally there, but I heard a recording of this conversation that Prabhupada had in Mayapur. in 1975. He was on a morning walk with some devotees, and trying to get this stupid phone to cooperate here. Okay. Got it, thank you. So he's on a morning walk with devotees, and this issue came up about what is the actual perfection of the pure devotee or the acharya. It's not that he doesn't, like, not remember a verse or might say something that doesn't make perfect sense or whatever. No, this is what came out in that at that time. So he's walking with Jayadwaita Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj, Satsarup Maharaj, and a couple other devotees. And so then Jayadwaita Maharaj at one point goes, the pure devotee, he knows everything. They're perfect in everything. But sometimes from our material viewpoint, we see some discrepancies. Just like, and then he says, then Prabhupada goes, because material viewpoint, the viewpoint is wrong. Therefore, you find discrepancies. So Jayadwaita goes, so we should think that we have the defect. Prabhupada says, yes, acharya is explained. Bhakti samsana. One who is preaching the cult of devotional service, he's acharya. Then why should you find any discrepancy? Because we see, for instance, sometimes the acharya may seem to forget something or not to know something. So from our point of view, if someone has forgotten, that is, and the Prabhupada says, no. That is not, then you do not understand. Acharya is not God, omniscient. He is servant of God. His business is to preach the bhakti cult. That is acharya. And Jai says, so we have a misunderstanding about what perfection is. Prabhupada says, yes, perfection is here. How he is preaching bhakti cult, that is all. And it goes on a little bit, but I'll stop there. Okay, so does anybody have anything they'd like to say or any question? Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much for a nice class. Not an easy class to give.
I cheated. I didn't really talk about the purpose.
No, but you couldn't go wrong because you were quoting right from the master. So there's nothing wrong. It's a question of putting it together in such a way that everyone can understand it in such a way that they can see what Prabhupada was trying to get. That what I got out of that class from Srila Prabhupada, basically he was just trying to say that... the reason these scientists can't do all the things that Prabhupada said, you can't make a human being, you can't make a monkey, you can't do any of these things, but you talk big, and but really you can't do anything. And one of the reasons is that they brag, is that they call themselves big, they call themselves great, they call themselves wonder, we made this wonder, we have this vaccine, we can stop the coronavirus and all of these kind of things, is that why they... want everyone to think that they're God. That's the main point. And the main point that they want to be God, but they can't be God because only God can be God. So as a substitute for that, they promote themselves as being wonderful and glorious and magnificent and so forth and so on. And people buy into this, that this vaccine is going to stop so many. And yet... so many people who have the vaccine are getting, they still get the coronavirus. The important point that Prabhupada is making is that they should not present themselves as knowers of God. The reason that they can't know the realities, they can't know the mysteries, they can't know the understanding, even though it's given very clearly in the Vedas as you were just presenting it, is it because their mind is completely filled with, I'll use the word that Prabhupada always used, cow dung. And cow dung meant that they cannot understand it, because as long as you want to be God, then you cannot get to know God. It's a cancellation. But as soon as you come to the position that I can never be God because of so many reasons, God is great. God, look at all the stars. Look at the moons. Look at the universes. Look at all of these things. How can all of that get there? And it's all working under an intelligent principle. But I have to admit that there must be a higher person who's creating all of this, who's doing all of this. And I don't want to, because I still want to be God. As long as I want to be God, then I want everybody to worship me, to honor me, to glorify me, to applaud me, to bow down to me, and every such thing. As long as I want that, I can never know the truth. But once I yield, once I surrender, once I bow down, once I realize that no human being could do any of all of this, it has to be a higher person. And how could we be a person? We're a reflection of a divine person, a higher person, a greater person. So all of this has come about because people are trying to cheat us into the belief that they are very great, they're very wonderful, they're very glorious, they're very amazing, when actually they're nothing compared to God. God is so amazing, so momentous, so just beyond words. And once we come to that conclusion that we cannot be like that, but Krishna can, if he wishes to, can give us some special power, as he does in the Shaktivesha avatars. They're able to do amazing things. Things that human beings normally cannot do, including creating planets, doing floating in the sky, being as tiny as an ant. They can do all this, but those things are nothing compared to what the Supreme Lord can do, which is beyond expression and is beyond conception, and is just, we should just put our head at the feet of the Lord and thank him for the opportunity to try to love him. And if we try to do that, so much more will be revealed to us than if we try to go the way of Einstein. Scientific this, scientific that, this leads to that, and this leads to that. No. Krishna says, just, and all activities, just, well, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without a doubt. I promise you this, he says to Arjuna, because you are my very dear friend. Always, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in this consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. And all those scientists are lost. And we here have the opportunity to get to know Krishna, even if we don't know all about the things that he did. That's not so important. What's important is that we love serving him, we love offering to him, we love giving our life to him, and we consider that nothing compared to what we owe him. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for that comment. Anybody else have anything they'd like to say?
Hare Krishna. So they're saying, people are saying that more you know about somebody, more you know about Krishna, more you love that person. It's natural. So is it, you can say, can we say like that, to the degree that we know about Krishna, to that degree we actually are less envious on him, on his devotees? You're saying in a class, you know, you have to no more Shavarupar books. So is it then to the degree then we don't know so much about Krishna, to that degree we are still envious? Like especially ordinary conditioned souls that are envious of Krishna. This is why they don't know about Krishna. This is why they don't want to accept him. So is it, question is it, statement is correct, to the degree then we don't know enough about Krishna, to that degree we are still envious?
Well, I mean, if you have the opportunity to hear from somebody who's a pure devotee, Shaktivesha avatar, like a, you know, Uttama Adi Kari, topmost devotee like Srila Prabhupada, and if we don't pay much attention to what he's saying or to what he's writing, you know, we just kind of like, as I said, have it go in one ear and out the other. Yeah, I think that's a symptom of envy. And if we pay, you know, make that effort to pay more attention, to really read what Prabhupada's saying or listen to what Prabhupada's saying and really think about it, try to really assimilate it, that's a sign of being submissive, and that's a way to get rid of that envy. That's what I would say. Anybody else have anything they want to? Okay, thank you very much. Gantrod Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.